Hi, this is Brigitte Mouchet with the Solari Report Wellness Series. Today we are going to focus on children's health and how to prepare them to be healthy adults. With the Solari Wellness Series, we want to empower you with the latest knowledge around topics that can make a big difference in your lives. We focus on prevention and healthy solutions. Today, I have the pleasure to talk in person with Dr. Michelle Perrot in the beautiful Tahoe area in Northern California. Michelle Perrot is a veteran pediatrician with over 35 years of experience in acute and integrative medicine. More than 10 years ago, Dr. Perrot transformed her clinical practice to include pesticide and health advocacy. She has both directed and worked as attending physician from New York's Metropolitan Hospital to UCSF Benioff Children's Hospital, Oakland. Dr. Perrot has managed her own business, Down to Earth Pediatrics. She is currently lecturing and consulting as well as working with Gordon Medical Associates, an integrative health center in Northern California. Dr. Michelle Perrot is in the middle of a book tour for her first book, What's Making Our Children Sick? Dr. Perrot, welcome to the Solari Wellness Series.
Thank you, Brigitte. I'm glad to be here.
Great. So first, let's talk about your book. What inspired you to write this book? And has anything changed since you started writing your book?
Absolutely. So I would like to begin by saying that I had an amazing co-author write the book together, Dr. Vincent Adams, who is a medical anthropologist at UCSF. And we met serendipitously because we were neighbors hiking together. And Vincent is an author with a specialty actually in Tibetan health. And I told him about my desire to write a book as well, due to the fact that I was seeing so many sick children. And I was able only to see a few patients in my office every day, 10, 15 patients. And I felt that the need was so prevalent to get the word out to a wider audience about the state of our children's health. And Vincent agreed to help write the book. We interviewed my patients. It took us 3 to 4 years to write the book. And actually, it's been out since 2017, but it's still relevant today, and we are still being asked to lecture and talk about it, and it's still a major issue, and our kids, since that book came out, are actually sicker. I have statistics since that book was released, which shows that things have actually progressed, not in a good direction for our children. So there is still relevance today.
I see. And so Do you have an answer why our children are sicker today?
When we look at the issues of what's facing our children, and there are so many factors that are making them sick, and what we like to hone in on is on food, because kids eat a lot and they eat all day, and babies may eat 8 or 9 or even 10 times a day. But the honest truth is there are many reasons why kids are sick. It's their food. Because we are now eating industrial food, which has changed over the past 22 years. It's all water. We know there are problems with EMFs, electromagnetic frequencies. There are problems with plastic exposure and nanoparticles. There are kids who are sensitive to vaccines and vaccine contaminants. There are children who are sensitive to emotional toxins and the effects of emotional stress. So there are many reasons why our kids are sick, but in this book, and in general, I focus on food as medicine, and that's a very important topic, and it's certainly not being covered in traditional, conventional medical settings.
Right. And so what kind of illness do you see with children?
The truth is all illnesses across the board are increasing, and at the top of my list of concern are what we call neurocognitive disorders, and those are kids affecting learning. Kids who are affected with learning issues such as ADHD and autistic spectrum condition. We don't even call it disorder now. We call it condition. Situations involving respiratory illness such as asthma, increases in eczema. Food allergies are off the charts elevated. Obesity is by epidemic, by definition, where anyone from 1 in 3 to 1 in 5 children is now obese. And obesity is not a benign disorder. It's associated with all types of issues from metabolic syndrome, cardiovascular disease, hypertension, and not to mention self-esteem and mental health issues from yeah. being obese, to things, situation in terms of sleep. 2 out of 3 children under the age of 10 now have something called dysomnias, which are sleep disorders. And then if we look at the mental health issues, kids are not faring well from the mental health perspective. In Western medicine, we cut children off at the neck as if like your head is divided from the rest of your body. We know they're all linked. And disorders such as anxiety, depression, OCD, anorexia, and eating disorders have all increased tremendously. I believe now the last statistic I saw were about 46% of kids in high school were suffering from depression. These are enormous numbers. And if you look at data, for example, of kids who are on drugs for psychotic drugs such as Risperdal, we are prescribing them younger and younger. I've seen 2- and 3-year-olds on antipsychotic medication. So we have a real array of illnesses that are showing exponential increases.
Mm-hmm. What about diabetes? Do you see that in children?
Diabetes as well, both type 1 and type 2, both are on the rise. Type 2 being more prevalent, but both are on the rise. And endocrine and thyroid disorders. I now have 9-year-old boys who have Hashimoto's disease. That was unheard of 20 years ago. So we have thyroid issues as well as all and growth. Kids who are failing to thrive is also on the rise. So all the hormonally linked disorders are also increasing. But type 1 diabetes is an autoimmune disorder, also increasing, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, and this is not affecting all children, right? I have friends who have kids who eat macaroni and cheese every night. And they are extremely bright and they do well at school. So who gets affected? Do we have an idea?
So we know that 54% of children now have a chronic disease. It's 1 out of 2 children. And so it doesn't affect everyone. You're absolutely right. But we have to appreciate that many of these disorders take many years to develop. For example, autoimmune diseases and cancers take decades to develop. And many of those beginnings begin in childhood. So although a child may not show overt signs of illness, they can develop later. And, you know, for example, that child who's eating macaroni and cheese every night, maybe it's organic macaroni and cheese, and maybe the diet is being hopefully nutritionally full or robust in other areas. We can only hope. And perhaps that mom, it was a really healthy mom, had a robust microbiome that the baby inherits when birthing through the vaginal canal. We can talk a bit about that. So there are genetic factors, there are epigenetic factors, and so much depends on the health of the dad, but mostly mom as well. So there are many reasons why you can have 5 children in a family and they all have different health. And this is something I hear as well. You know, my kids are fine and I don't feed them this or that. And that may be true for now, but that doesn't mean later on they won't be affected.
I see. So do you work a lot with mothers in your practice to help with a healthy pregnancy?
So what I'm recommending now, is, especially through my reading and what I've learned over the decades, is that in this toxic world that we live in, we really need to employ a pre-pregnancy clean out. And in a perfect world, I think before conception, both parents need to engage in cleaning up their diet, their environment, both internal and external milieu, to ensure the health, the healthiest baby they can possibly have. Otherwise, they can offload a lot of toxins onto the baby. So I call that pre-pregnancy clean out. And any amount of time before conception is beneficial, whether it's a month, 3 months, or 6 months. Once you are pregnant, it's not the time for cleaning up.
Yeah. And so we all know families with an autistic child, right? And so in your practice, have you been able to reverse that? Is that possible?
So autistic spectrum condition is, since we even wrote the book, is now affecting 1 in 28 boys. It's in every practice, 1 in 58 kids. Yes, we wrote about at least, we have 3 kids on the spectrum in the book. my clinical patients that have all been reversed. You can reverse autism, absolutely. It's a reversible disorder. The younger you start, the better. So if you wait too long, it gets more difficult. If you can get kids under 6 or 8 years old, it's easier. And once they're over 12, it gets more difficult. But yes, it's a reversible condition. And the first place I start is with their diet.
I see. Okay, I heard that EMF can also have an influence, but everything is related because if you have a poor diet, you probably have a lot of heavy metals. Vaccinations, EMF and heavy metals have are connected as well, amplify the effects of
the problems. You know, I mean, we wrote about food in the book, and I've been so focused on food, but I am not blind to the other factors that are making our kids sick. Mm-hmm. I am very EMF concerned. As a matter of fact, that is the next platform I hope to address since I've been on the GMO and pesticide issue for so long. And I'm particularly concerned about 5G, small cell radiation, and the effect on children's health and the profound increase on young children on devices, on Wi-Fi, on laptops, and on tablets and cell phones on their head. This idea that Wi-Fi is benign is not true. And so, you know, we could do a whole segment on Wi-Fi and 3G, 4G, 5G, dirty electricity on health. It's a huge factor. And we've known about these effects for decades, I believe since the 1960s. But oftentimes truth is obfuscated for profit. That has been the motto in America, is profit over health, particularly with our children.
Yeah. So in previous interviews with the Wellness Series, we've talked about gut health and how to stay healthy. So this time we could go a little deeper. Maybe if you have a good scientific explanation, but that's understandable by lay people, of what's happening in the guts and why is the gut so important? Why what we eat and drink can have such an effect on our health and what we are developing as a what problems children may be developing mm-hmm. because of that.
From my point of view, the driver of gut health, which affects all of health, is the microbiome. And there are many factors that affect gut health. Again, not to oversimplify, but the microbiome is probably one of the key factors in staying healthy. You inherit your microbiome from mom when you pass through the vaginal canal. So already we know that if mom's microbiome is not healthy for whatever reason, she's been on antibiotics, she has autoimmune disease, she's on a lot of pharmaceuticals, that will affect the microbiome that the baby inherits. That microbiome that the baby inherits through passage of the vaginal canal then sets up the baby's immunity. It's called the innate immune system by talking to the thymus. And that sets up a huge part of the baby's immunity. And that microbiome is malleable until probably maybe age 3. After about 800 days, you can no longer really impact your microbiome. You can support it, but you can no longer change it. So what happens those first 3 years of life is imperative in terms of long-term health. So that early period of life is key for health. Now we know, for example, that babies who are born via C-section, about one-third of American births, don't acquire the mom's microbiome. So we know that their microbiome looks like the surgical suite that they where they were delivered. Now, breast milk is not sterile. So the baby will inherit the microbiome of mom through the breast milk. But if the baby doesn't nurse and is born via C-section, that baby's at a huge immunologic disadvantage. Now, that microbiome is not only important for immune function. Those organisms that chat with each other, they have a lot of crosstalk between organisms, are also responsible for a production of certain vitamins like folate, B12, vitamin K, thiamine, etc. And also, they are the first line of defense for detoxification on your microbiome. And so, the more robust, the more organisms and the more diverse your microbial community, which can be as high as 10 microbes to every one human cell, the more robust your health will be. So in this over-hygienic society that we live in a world of C-sections and sanitizing hand gel, babies are born compromised. So they're starting off at a disadvantage. And then if they're fed formula, with that has been genetically modified, like soy formula for any reason, that is filled with pesticides. Pesticides, for example, the most common being Roundup, a glyphosate-based herbicide, which is also an antibiotic. You will kill off further their microbiome. And there's research coming out right now that shows that. We know that Roundup, the one I say is most commonly used, which was marketed and patented as an antibiotic by Monsanto, now Bayer in 2010, is an antimicrobial. So it kills off the microbiome. How much and how often? We don't know. It's not been studied. It's being looked at right now by a study by Microbiome Labs, who's doing some great research. So we have babies who are compromised from immunological detoxification and impairment of nutrients like vitamins, like the B vitamins, because of a compromised microbiome. And so that's how they're starting. And then when you subject them to other stressors, which we can go into, we then in 5, 10, 20 years will expect to see illness.
Wow. So what can we do when you get a child that starts like that with a handicap, if we can use that term? So what can we do with those? And then what can we do to prepare the other ones, be healthy mm-hmm. adults?
So what you can do for a child. Now, fortunately, the body has the innate sense to heal itself. So if you supply with the nutrients that it needs and the beneficial food and water and environment for thriving, oftentimes many of these things will repair. The first place you have to start is with organic food. If the food is not organic, chances are, even if you get a kid better with whatever tools are in your integrative toolbox, the conditions will often relapse. How much organic? It depends on the kid. Some kids can need more. Some can get away with less. It really depends on the individual and how robust they are. There are individual variances, and that's why integrative medicine is an individualized practice. Not every kid is the same. I also recommend filtered water, because many water systems from Newark to Flint, Michigan, Newark, New Jersey, have old pipes filled with lead and other heavy metals. And those are neurotoxic. So you have to often use a water filter. There are simple things. So you have to clean up the internal milieu, and you have to clean up the external milieu. You have to decrease the number of toxic products used in your home for cleaning, for shampooing, for what you put on the family dog. All this matters, and taking off the shoes at the house matters as well. So if you can decrease the toxic load of your child, you are creating a much healthier, easier load for that kid to manage. There is something where we say the allostatic load that this kid is subjected to is too high. And remember, children are not little mini adults. You might have a child who's only 20 or 30 pounds. And so they can tolerate much less, and their detoxification systems are not as well endowed as adults, so they can't do it as well. So you have to decrease their toxic load in every sense of the word, and some of these kids will get better on their own. But once you have a disease that's established, let's say asthma, for example, 1 in 8 white children have asthma, 1 in 6 African-American children have asthma, common but not benign, you need to really treat them. And whether practitioners like to use herbs, Ayurveda, homeopathic supplements, energetic, there are many, many tools for healing. There's so many tools, and there are many ways we do it. I have my ways, and I respect and appreciate other methodologies. They can all help kids get better, but many of those kids will need treatment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So do you see also other health threats like addictions to tech devices? Do you see that among your patients? Is that something that you're being exposed to?
It's a tremendous concern. I talk about this a lot. I'm very concerned about gaming. Lots of kids are gaming, and online gaming is one of the biggest growing industries in America right now, particularly about high school and college kids. And it puts them in front of their screens an enormous amount of time each day. And also, you know, this gaming releases neurochemicals like dopamine, which creates addictions. And so then the kids, when they're not gaming, feel depleted and anxious because they don't have those feel-good hormones. Well, they're not actually hormones. They're chemicals called neurotransmitters, which make them feel better. You know, there's, you get a big rush when you have dopamine released. And a lot of these games do just that. So we have kids basically medicating themselves with feel-good chemicals. And then when they're off their devices, they don't feel as well because they don't have the release of such chemicals like dopamine. So this addiction issue to gaming, for example, and devices is profound. And parents, especially younger parents, are using devices, whether it's their cell phone or their iPads or whatever, to quiet children as babysitters. And I have a kid who's uncomfortable in the office, and one of the parents will immediately hand over their cell phone to quiet the kid down. So in addition to exposing them to endless amounts of Wi-Fi radiation, children are not learning to self-soothe on how when they're anxious. So they're looking for their devices to soothe themselves. And I have a huge problem with that, and not just me. It's in the literature for sure, that these are not healthy compensatory mechanisms for the stresses our kids will face. So I'm concerned.
Yeah. So that means they never learn how to connect with themselves. They don't even know who they are. And we know where that leads, addictions and depression, right?
Yes, absolutely, Brigitte. And as we said earlier, and we talked about those stats earlier, they're all rising, the anxiety and the depression.
Mm-hmm. And then if we look at adults in the middle of all this, are you recommending the same solutions or do you look at adults differently?
The adults, I don't look differently. I mean, because when we treat children, we're treating families. So if you cannot, you know, have a pizza, pepperoni pizza, and little Susie and Johnny are getting kale salad. That doesn't work. You have to treat the entire family. Chances are the parents are not well either. If they have a sick kid, there are many parents, and even if they don't have health challenges themselves, they have the stressors from having a sick child. Having a sick child means being up at night, time lost from work. One of the parents has to stay home from work. Most families have two parents working in America. And it causes stress on the entire family. So we need to treat the entire family unit when we treat. And if I make any recommendations for food, water, supplements, I often wind up treating the parents and this other siblings as well. I just saw a kid recently I'm treating for autism, and the mom said, oh, by the way, the sibling who's normal has diarrhea, treated her too. And my husband and I have PTSD from having all these sick kids and all their issues, and I treated them too. So you wind up treating the whole family unit. When you change their diets, what you find is that everybody gets better. It's not just the kids who get better, but the parents get better as well.
Mm-hmm. Good. And so can we talk a little bit about the husbands?
Mm-hmm.
It seems like they tend to have a different opinion about a lot of things, you know? Do you see what I mean?
Oh, yeah. We have a whole chapter in the book called Warrior Moms. And since that time, I have adjusted a lot of my attitudes because I've been so used to just dealing with women and talking to the moms and not talking to the dads. And that, I believe, is faulty. Because what happens is oftentimes the mom is bringing the kid into the clinic and the dad is not privy to all the conversations you've had with mom about changing diet, about changing, you know, computer time, about cell phone use, etc. And they come in and they are so sort of out of the loop. And I think that's a problem and it's not inclusive. So since even writing that book, where we dedicated it to the moms of chronically ill children, I say, wait, hold on a second. Dads need to be in this equation as well. Some, not to generalize or stereotype, but many times in my own practice, from an anecdotal perspective, I found that the dads were more science-driven and wanted data. And I know that sounds like I'm stereotyping, and it's not always that. But just for the sake of argument, I found the dads are more science-driven. They want to see the data. And moms might not as much, but everything I do is science-based. Whether the book we wrote, the lectures I give, I use science as my platform. And when it's clinically based, I call it anecdotal. We are in the age of science, data, empiricism, where people want to know that it's based on scientific principles. When I have it, I report it. And when I don't, I say it's based on my clinical experience. So treating the dads, you often need more data, and we can get so many lab tests to show the dads the abnormal, and moms, abnormal gut function, abnormal microbiome, low levels of nutrients, iron deficiencies, heavy metal levels. You can document all of this on standard laboratory data. So yes, I like data. I like to look at numbers of kids when I can. Drawing blood on children is not always so easy, but when we have information, it's good to share. And as kids get better, you can also show that their data gets better, their labs improve. I want to see clinical improvement. I use labs as an adjunct in practice, not as an absolute. It's an adjunct, but the most important thing is how the patient is responding. But treating dads, I think, is very different, and you have to appreciate where men are at.
Yeah. And so do you see mothers more as change agents in this situation?
Yes, I have found in my own experience, if the mom was not on board for whatever reason, the change was not going to happen. And I have also been in a situation where lots of moms arguing with dads, and we became triangulated in my office with me in the middle between two parents arguing, and that situation does not work. Mm-hmm. That, and I tell parents often, you have to be on board and you cannot divide in front of the child. So that if you're going to have these conversations, do not have them in front of the kid. Have them offline and see if you can make some compromise. So, for example, I've often heard the argument that organic food is too expensive. And that's mostly from dad. I've heard that over and over. And indeed, organic food is more expensive, but that's changing, Brigitte. It's really changing. And I tell parents, I'm more expensive. And you missing work for having a sick kid at home is more expensive. So you have to decide what you're going to do. The average American family eats out 5.6 times a week. If people were to eat home more and cook more, I think you can offset the cost of organic with eating out less.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Could you summarize a little bit for us all the key things that, you know, if you have children or if you want to have children, what do you need to think about and to do?
Yes. So if before you have children and you're thinking about it, I would suggest you do several things. Number one is if you can work with an integrative practitioner, naturopath, acupuncturist, traditional Chinese medicine, work with an integrative practitioner. If you can't, you can try getting some books. Like I like the one by Debbie Hamilton, who's a pediatric integrative pediatrician about prevention of ADHD and autism. And I think she wrote a very good book several years ago. And it gives you ideas of how to approach this. Bonnie Nedro, NEDROW, she's a naturopath in Northern California, also has two great books about pre-pregnancy clean out and detoxing, and a workbook, a cooking workbook for detox. And so you start with changing your diet by eating organic. If you yourself have any health issues, I would recommend immediate elimination of gluten and dairy. Just take it out of your diet. Those are inflammatory foods and decrease inflammatory response. I suggest you use a water filter. It can be something as a Brita or Pure or a Pitcher carbon device filter, or you can get a more sophisticated system, and I help parents figure out, or potential parents, where to get those water filters. And then I talk about detoxing their chemicals for their personal use and their cleaning, and I usually recommend a book by Beth Greer, Supernatural Home, on how to detox their home. They have homework. People have homework on how they need to do this, because this information is not necessarily intuitive, and they're not learning it in their traditional doctor's office. And in all fairness, your traditional doctor has 10 minutes to see you, and there's no way they're going to cover. There's just no way. It's impossible. And these poor docs having, you know, 30, 40 patients in a day cannot cover these very intensive topics. And so then we start there. And then I talk about if you can get blood work, that'd be great. And I like to look at the parents' nutrient levels. And if they're low in, for example, the minerals such as calcium, magnesium, manganese, zinc, I like to boost those levels. I like to for sure look at vitamin D levels. So important for immune function, boost that. And I like to look and see if they have any kind of genetic SNPs, we call them. And those are where they cannot, for example, detox well. Those are called methylation issues. And if so, I give them methylation support using something called methyl B12 or methylfolate, and or usually both. So then we start restoring their own nutrients so their own biologic functions work better. For sure, I give the parents probiotics and or eat fermented foods. And we go over that in depth. The restoration of their own microbiome before pregnancy is enormous, and I try and rebuild their own microbiome through diet and supplementation. I talk a lot about prebiotics, which foods to eat, you know, vegetable-based diets, etc. Lastly, if they are heavy metal toxic, we talk about detoxification. And that is a massive topic because so many people now have heavy metal toxicity from aluminum, mercury, lead, cadmium, etc. And you will offload those heavy metals on your first baby if mom is heavy metal toxic. So to decrease those chemicals, those heavy metals rather, is really imperative prior to conception. And if I could recommend anything, it would be detoxification. But I do it in steps. And you don't want to overwhelm families, because if I laid out all of that in one visit, you will overwhelm the family. Mm-hmm. You will overwhelm people like, what is she talking about?
Yeah.
So you start simple in stages. And you ask people, what can you do? Can you do this? Can you do that? Can you do more? You can't? Let's stop there. Can you just switch to organic? Can you eat out less? You know, so you have to talk to people. People are receptive to these conversations, and they often don't know. And so it's an education process, and it's also empowerment. This is not a patriarchal, hierarchical system. We are partners in health.
It's like being a coach, right?
It's a health coach.
Yeah. So, that's a good program. I like that. Anything else you want to talk about before we touch on something else?
I think, you know,
kids' health.
I think if anything else I could talk about our children's health is to let children be children, let them play, don't wire them to their devices, get them off their computers if they have computers or cell phones, and if I could do, and then if I could tell anything for parents, I'd say shut your routers off at night.
Yes.
If I could say anything in addition to everything else, it's in my recommendation list now. And I would say to play with your children and to find out, you know, not to be so stressed out. If I make two neurotic parents, I've done nothing. So to find laughter, because one of the best de-stressors there is laughter. So laugh with your kids, play with your kids, get off the devices, and everybody should start moving together. Have a great time.
Yes. So before the interview, we talked a little bit about your other areas of interest as a doctor and what you want to do after your book tour. Do you want to share a little more about that?
Yes, so there is life after books, and I will not be writing a second book right now because there's still a lot of education to hone in on. And the areas that I find particularly concerning are EMFs and 5G. And the 5G rollout I find very alarming. And 5G is not just a more advanced 4G. It's a different radio frequency with a different health effects. And the way it needs to be rolled out is detrimental to children's health. And it's being rolled out and pushed upon us without health investigation. I think we do know about the health effects, but the data has been suppressed by industry. So I'm focusing more on my 5G concerns. Mm-hmm. In addition, I am really concerned about, even though I've done a lot on GMOs, I'm really concerned about increasing pesticide usage and other toxicants on kids' health. And particularly, I've been looking at the microbiome. So I've been really focusing on the effects of pesticides on the microbiome and in terms of kids' health. And the other thing that I really like to talk about a lot is the effects of ACEs. Those are called adverse childhood experiences. So things that happen to children affect them as adults. And whether it's things, negative things such as divorce, abuse, addictions, illness, chronic disease, bullying, these things are not benign. And we can actually score kids and predict which kids will go on to adults to develop cardiovascular disease, autoimmunity, and unfortunately cancer based on these ACE scores. So these are the kind of things that I've been focusing now more on, lecturing more on, broadening, you know, the scope of the conversations. And lastly, but not least, the other thing I'm thinking about getting more involved with is oral health and dental health. It is a big black hole, and no pun intended, in medicine, where dentists just focus on the oral health as if it's separate from your body. And children and adults have can have such poor oral health, which also is an indicator of health, gut health, because the mouth is the beginning of your gut. Your yeah. gut goes from your mouth to your anus. So if you have poor dental hygiene, I can tell you your gut's probably not healthy either. Yeah. So what we do in the mouth, everything from dental amalgams with heavy metals to plastics to root canals to fluoride treatments, I have concerns about some of these standards of practice that we do
yeah.
and educating people about that. If you show me an adult with a lot of health issues, I look in their mouth.
Yeah.
So Sid, these are some of the areas that I hope to get into over the next few years. We'll see where it goes. It's open.
Uh-huh. Wonderful. It's great to keep learning all the time, right?
And, you know, the other thing we touched upon, Brigitte, before is the effect of energy healing.
Yes.
And
I was going to get to that.
Yes. And
my favorite topic.
It's one of mine, too, because, you know, as an MD, I've been an MD homeopath for 23 years. I've been an MD since 1982, a homeopath since, I think, 1995, perhaps. So I've been at it a long time, and it's the... One of the keys to my success as a practitioner has been using homeopathy. Mm-hmm. And homeopathy is a form of energetic medicine.
Yeah. So how would you define homeopathy for people who are not too familiar with it?
Homeopathy is using energetic medicines based usually on little sugar pills or potentially liquids based on the principle that like cures like. So we often give what we're trying to cure. So if somebody has anxiety, we use a remedy from either mineral, plant, or animal, or other for sometimes, that would, if you took enough of a dose of it, would cause anxiety. But because we give that substance in such low doses, often immeasurable energetically, very super low, still energetic, but often not measurable, it can often cure the similar disorder. So it's like cures like, based on the work of Samuel Hahnemann. So homeopathy has been around actually even longer than Hahnemann, who was around the 1780s. And it's constantly being refined, and it's under attack and siege many times in Western medicine. It's very gentle, but extremely effective. And many of my results that I've gotten with children was I use homeopathic treatment as my starting tool.
Mm-hmm.
Western medicine has problems with homeopathy, and I will spare the listener the conversation as to how that developed. It's a long story. But in Europe, for example, it's widely used in Europe. India, you throw a rock, you hit a homeopath. And so the rest of the world, it's a very common yeah. treatment modality. Very safe for babies and nursing moms and the elderly. So it's a wonderful adjunct.
Yeah. My younger sister was treated homeopathically through my mother before she was born, and she's different. She's the best of all of us. So for vaccines, you can use homeopathy to clear the effects of vaccines, right?
You can. I have. I use different homeopathics, you know, everything from Thuja, which is a homeopathic plant remedy, to formulations made by different companies. Like this company I love called Dysbio makes a homeopathic remedy to offset vaccine effects called Adaclens. Vax, not Adaclens. Adaclens is for pesticide. Vax is for vaccine reactions. So I've used them. I recommend them to parents to use these remedies. They're very gentle, but very effective.
Yeah.
So yes, there are different things you can use.
Any success with autism using homeopathy?
Oh yeah, autism is great.
Really?
There are many remedies to use. Oh my gosh, yes, many remedies for autism, but they're individualized. I don't have one remedy for autism. It's based on the child.
Yeah.
Because there are many faces of autism. That's why we call it a spectrum condition. There are many types.
Yeah.
Yes, of course, there are key features of autism, but I still try to look at the individual who has autism and not autism as a waste paper basket diagnosis.
Yeah. Yeah. Homeopathy is very personalized, right?
Yes. Yes.
So, and in terms of, what's your vision of the future of medicine? Do you have an idea?
The only way I can see medicine surviving to take care of the population that we now have is something that Vincent and I wrote about called eco-medicine, where we really, you can call it what you like, bioregulatory, eco, integrative, functional, holistic medicine, but this medicine that's more encompassing of the individual as a whole, not based on individual parts, but organisms, that people are biologic systems with a mental, physical, and a spiritual being, and that we have to address all the components of their health. For me, it's with food at the helm. Food is medicine, but you address the individual as a whole, and that we as Western practitioners must encompass a broader net of different treatment modalities. That, yes, you'll hear Western docs say diet and exercise, you know, for people, and that is the beginning, but it's not quite enough. And that there is a role for pharmacology in medicine. You know, if you're having a heart attack, you can give some nitrate drugs, although I have great remedies, homeopathics for heart attack. But there are places for pharmacology in Western medicine and in all medicine, absolutely, some very great drugs. However, that is just one tool. And we have to just broaden our toolbox as Western practitioners. There's so many other ways to heal people. There's, you know, hands-on medicine, you know, and spirit healing, and, you know, and prayer for others. There are many forms of healing. So you have to look at, what does that patient require? If I can't provide it, then I need to know who to refer to for that patient. And I often ask people, what resonates with you of what's in my toolbox? And people will tell me what resonates with them.
Yes, and I totally agree with that. Because, you know, acupuncture can work really well for some people, not for some others. Homeopathy, same thing. If you don't believe in it, it's not going to work.
Correct.
And other methods as well. So that's great. Thank you. Thank you very much. Any last thought you want to share with our audience?
So I appreciate your taking the time to learn about health of children and how we promote the health of our children. And I would add that this conversation needs to extend to our animal companions. Our dogs are not faring very well. Our cats, the family hamster, that we have to, I used to tell parents, if you change yourself, then that will create a big enough of a ripple effect. And I no longer say that. And I tell people now that you have to not only change your family, but extend yourself to activism, whether it's in your school, your community, your hospital, your church, your synagogue, your playgroup, your mother's group, whatever, is to extend your network. That just working as individuals is not enough anymore. That if we could all set our intentions to a bigger community, I think that is what's required. Go to your small town meetings. Let your voice be heard. Organize your own street. You know, make food together as a community. That we need to broaden ourselves. And this individualistic American approach that we are as individuals, I think needs to be shifted.
I agree, because there's no time to stay within your own little family unit anymore.
No, we need to think broader. And if people, I feel, if they were to make the change at the food level and we were to regenerate the soil, that could offset climate change. And I think it all begins with our soil. And so if we can profoundly affect the dirt, literally, you will affect the environment, your own microbiome, which is a dirt equivalent. And then we can cause this massive change and improvement. It's by removing the chemical inputs and getting back to a more quote unquote organic basis.
Yeah. And one more question about that. What do you think about cattle, raising cattle? I thought there was, you know, a good way of doing it. If you rotate them, it can actually revitalize the soil. But it seems like vegetarians or vegans still don't think that that is correct because there's too much methane. But I told one of them, you know, if we were giving a healthy diet to the cattle, maybe there would be less methane released. What do you think of that?
I it may be the number of cattle. You know, we have converted so much land to grazing that if we had decreased the amount of cattle and then treated them grazing what they're supposed to be eating instead of grain-based, but, you know, grazing-based, and they do, and by moving the cattle, you do turn the soil you know, by and their manure, if you feed them healthy organic feed and not genetically modified alfalfa, their guts are healthy. I've seen pictures of cattle who are healthy and those who are fed GMO alfalfa. The differences are incredible in the effect of health of cattle, that our cattle are not healthy either. And they are actually being affected by something called cattle wasting disease because they're eating awful food in these CAFOs. So I think if we were to treat our animals humanely,
yeah,
and grazing, pasture raised, pasture fed, and we ate less of it and more vegetarian based diets with less meat, but people could eat meat. I'm not actually opposed when you treat animals humanely and feed them well, but our diet should be vegetable based. And if you do eat meat, then it should be humanely raised on organic feed. There's no doubt in my mind. I think cattle serve a purpose. The numbers and how they're fed, absolutely not.
Yeah. Okay, Dr. Perro, thank you so much for talking with us today. Your dedication to finding solutions for tough health challenges, especially for children, is admirable, and we thank you for that. So you're really an inspiration on many levels. And if people are interested in your book, where is the best place to find it?
They can read What's Making Our Children Sick. They can get it from Chelsea Green. Of course, their local booksellers, Amazon, of course. And I do have a website. I'm the executive director of a website called GMOscience.org, which is a website dedicated to the science behind GMOs, their associated pesticides, with a lens on health. And they can look at that, and we update that monthly. And if they want to learn more about that specifically, I most likely will also can be found eventually through Gordon Medical Associates, but my practice is on hold right now while I finish the book tour. We have a trip coming up to China. I'm going to be talking not about the book, but it will be talking about the effect of pesticides and ADHD. So we still have a lot of work to do, and other countries are indeed getting on board.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Thank you. This is Brigitte Mouchet with the Solari Report Wellness Series. Thank you for listening, and take good care of yourself, because it's more fun to be well.